You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's Deputy Chairman at Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And it's with a heavy heart that I talk about something that's really, I don't know if it sets the scene, but it certainly sets the scene for South Africa for me. Before I get into that, I used to work with John Robbie. He was on the 702 Talk Radio breakfast show, and he was a really, really excellent presenter. When I sort of suggested I was going to move to Cape Town, he said to me, "Cape Town, Lindsay." And he says, this Irish brogue, he says, "Nice set, shame about the cast." In other words, a very nice backdrop, but nasty people. And I would expand that to South Africa now. And the reason I'm saying that, and I'm not being nasty about South Africans, but just it really hit home to me, the Isabel van Coller murder. Right. And I saw your tweet about it. And it made me a bit tearful, actually. It was just the most awful, event.
I know. You know, Lindsay, I know that area very well. I don't say I've often driven there. Sometimes on the way home from the airport, I might take a detour and turn right at the Edenvale Hospital and continue. And what distressed me about this was just the indignity of her death.
Yes.
That here's a woman on her way to work, 5:45 in the morning, obviously conscientious that she goes at that time. And I'm assuming she was on the way to work, stops it because she wouldn't go through that area. I'm sure she's either in Bramley or working up somewhere heading towards Sandton at that early hour. The traffic lights are out of order. I suppose that doesn't make any difference. You know, if you look at the full video, cars are going through, taxis are going through. Someone walks in front of her. She slows down. As soon as she slows down, she's descended upon by, what, 4 or 5 different people. And the worst thing is that you don't know what ensues. All you know is that even though these hijackers are attacking her, more and more cars go by, you know, just indifferent.
Yes.
It's not as though no one witnesses it. And this is the tragedy. And what makes it sickening is that there are so many people who would have witnessed this, who would have looked past and seen that this woman is in distress but chose not to do anything. The next thing you do is you see them drive off in this Kia and you see this limp body just dumped.
You see the car moving ahead for a little while. Obviously, she was trying to get away. And then the chap opens the door and shoots her and then drags her body out, dumps it on the road, and then gets out. I can't believe it. Is there any other country in the world that this happens? There probably are lots. But because of social media and because of technology, we can see this. I mean, it's happening every day. I was saying to Magnus Haystack in a previous interview about this. And I just can't comprehend the mentality. Why not just say, "Excuse me, madam," with the gun to her head, "Can I have your cell phone? Can I have your car keys? Off you go." Why do what they did?
But that's all they wanted, because at the end of the day, the car was recovered within a few hours, not even. It wasn't even difficult to find the car.
But why shoot her, David?
After the motor car.
Why shoot her? Why shoot her? Why kill her? My point is, if you're a robber, if you're seeking to, because of whatever your personal circumstances are, which still doesn't justify it, but let's say that you're so desperate, just say, "Madam, please get out the car. We're taking it," and she gets out and she walks away and phones her family or a taxi or something and gets away from the scene. Why brutalize her like that?
I don't know, because that's South African life, and that's the tragedy of South African life, because it's not only did it happen here, it happens all the time. There was another story of these two ladies in Isipingo, which is in KZN.
Yes.
A similar thing where they were shot. Nothing was taken, absolutely nothing taken. Two ladies, 39 and 40, whatever it is, good friends, the same thing, just brutally murdered. And I think what got me about this Isabel van Coller murder was so many witnesses. It was just done in broad daylight, brazenly in front of many, many people who in normal circumstances would act as a witness. You know, if they were arrested, they would be rounded up and act as a witness to this murder. But they know that they're going to get away with it and no one's going to say anything. And therefore, it is just accepted that you can do this. You know, that's South African life. You can go around attacking people, shoot them without any fear. of repercussions. Yes, they were caught. They appeared in the courts this morning. I don't know what the outcome is, but I think that is the absolute horror of this whole thing, and just dumping this body. So it affected me terribly. It's just like
me too.
And the worst, here comes the second thing, is it doesn't make headlines. You know, it doesn't, it's not a media story. It doesn't even appear, I don't know, page two, page three, whatever it is. Because when I tweeted it, I could see that it wasn't in the media simply because of the response that I engendered, you know, that I got from it. It was obviously that it was a story that was not known or widespread. There is no reaction from government at all. There's no reaction from the police at all. This is just a horror story that happens every half an hour in this country. And I'll say that again, every half an hour, there's a murder of this kind, this nature. They're not passionate murders. They're not murders of for whatever gang war, you know, the gang wars, whatever it is. But this happens all the time. It's not news. So live with that, Lindsay, yeah. You know.
Nice set. Shame about the cast. It's absolutely disgusting, David. Naspers and Prosus at 3:30 this afternoon, South African time, came out with trading statements. The share price is doing well. Did you read them?
I went through it. It's always complicated because of the nature of the business. Their biggest investment is obviously Tencent, which did okay. You know, if you look through the results, they're not disastrous numbers. In fact, the closer you get to it, the more encouraged you are about what lies ahead for Tencent. The story is not over. So they have to adjust, and there are a lot of adjustments in these profit statements. They booked a profit last year for Flipchart. This year they booked, you know, so that distorts the numbers. And so we go. They booked, you know, this year included Make My Trip. And then you have these fair value adjustments for Tencent investments and that. So it's a very complicated to look, you know, if you see the actual results. What they do come out with is what they call core headline earnings, and they do that on their continuing operations. That's up between 3% and 9%, and a reasonable number. Why they're up today is because of China. Tencent was up in China this morning. China stimulating their economy one step at a time. You know, today they reduced the 7-day reverse repo rate was lowered. So these are all measures to just kickstart the Chinese economy. So I think on the back of that, we saw the Hang Seng up and Chinese market's better. So I think this is what we are benefiting from today.
Okay, this morning at 7:05, we had MTM Group Limited saying the following. MTM South Africa signs an expanded roaming agreement with Cell C. And I think of Cell C, I think of Blue Label, I think of Telkom, I think of MTN. Yeah. What on earth is going on there? It's a bit confusing, isn't it?
Very, very, very confusing. No one knows the backdrop to that because Cell C have come out. Cell C have come out and made a statement that, you know, they've entered in the roaming agreement with MTN. Now, if you look through the last year's MTN results, not last year's, a few weeks ago, they were owed $2.5 billion, which they did not account, waiting for it to come through on cash. MTN did say that they'd received a little bit of cash here, but we don't know the clarity of the position. Now, also, you've got Cell C now associated with Telkom.
Yes.
So why would Cell C do a deal? Why would Cell C do a deal when they're in talk with Telkom?
Or
apparently, yeah, Telkom. So, the roaming a deal with MTN when they're in talks with Telkom. So I'm not quite sure how this all fits into place, you know, where this is all leading. It's a very confusing picture. Telkom came down and continues its path downwards. Cell C is not listed, but Blue Label picks up very slightly. But Blue Label are virtually out the picture. They've written the investment down to zero. They have no representatives on the Cell C board anymore. So you can count them out, you know, other than licking their wounds. So I don't know what the next steps are. You know, we're all trying to work it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Blue Label up around about 7.5%, but obviously off a very low base. Indeed.
Very low base.
Lots of other stuff going on as well, David. Done the Cell C, MTN thing. Netcare doing quite well after, I think it's a sell the rumour by the fact. Netcare.
I went through the presentation. Look, there's a lot of stuff out today, so it's very difficult to do it justice. But
yeah.
I went through, there's nothing to get excited about in the numbers. They are generating a lot of cash at the moment, so they up their dividend. But we're talking sub 10% numbers here. So there's nothing, you know, there's nothing greatly exciting. I think analysts are turning more bullish on it for whatever reason. I'm not sure what's exciting them about it, whether it's the fact that they've now got rid of their UK operation or have ring-fenced it. I think they deconsolidated it, so it doesn't make any difference what happens there. But, it's hard to get overly excited about what you're reading about, you know, what you're seeing. It's a difficult industry. I'm not criticizing the government. I'm not criticizing management anyway. I'm just saying, okay, I read through this. So what's exciting the market? What's pushed them 5% better? I'm not sure whether it's a dividend or whether it's the hope that things are going to improve more dramatically from now on. But Lindsay. I'm not the analyst in that area, but I did read through it and I said, okay, you know what? Why would I push the shares up 5% on this, on this announcement?
Yeah, exactly. And the same thing really resonates with me when it comes to Barlow World, because it says here, these are the results for the year ended 30th of September. The share is exactly flat as we pre-record this interview just before the JSE closes. Pleasing performance from Equipment Southern Africa, Equipment Russia, and our Bartrac JV in challenging trading conditions. Strong performance from automotive amidst a tough macroeconomic environment, and so it goes on. And it says here, strong free cash generation of 3.1 billion, but it was 3.6 billion over the previous period. And it goes on and on.
I don't know.
Well, what about Barlow World? I mean, it's boring, isn't it? Isn't it boring? Am I being unkind?
Well, I suppose these are the kind of operations that would attract you if there was huge expansion of the mining side, if there was a lot of construction taking place globally,
and people were buying cars.
So if they were buying Yellow Metal, which is Caterpillar, which is their big agencies, or buying different equipment for mining, yes, we'd get carried away and excited. But it's not really happening. There might be pockets where you're getting expansion. So it's difficult for them to extract any kind of big numbers. Where they do make a bit of money is on the after sales of the equipment. But it's moderate. You know, this is not a knockout. It's a good result in very, very difficult conditions. So they're doing the best they can, you know, in the current circumstances. But you don't hear of massive expansion here. In infrastructure or in that area. So you look at it and say, okay, so what? You know, okay, fine. But you're not going to go run out and buy them.
No, you're not. Pioneer Food Group came out with their results for to the end of September. The share price down very slightly today. It's interesting because at the same time, Astral came out with their numbers as well, and that share price up around about 1% at the moment. So food. I mean, obviously, people have to eat all the time, whether they're poor or whether they're rich. But I don't know. Which one do you go for?
Well, you can't go for Pioneer because there's a bid out for them by Pepsi.
Yes, exactly.
You know, Pepsi, remember, 25 billion, I think, which translates to pretty much where they're trading at the moment. There again, it's difficult conditions in the economy, consumer under a lot of pressure. So they're not going to rush in and buy that. Nor do they give you any positive view on the outlook. You know, simply, I suppose, that they're going to be taken out. But I think one of the negatives is that they had to impair that. You know, they've had to impair quite a few assets as well, which applies across the board. When you're not making adequate returns on your capital investment, you know, when your returns on the capital that you've outlaid is low, you actually have to write that asset down to represent a fair value. I didn't pick up Astral's story. I must be honest.
Wasn't great.
There was a lot of. What is it out?
No, I know, really not good.
Oh, here you are. Sorry. 705, I missed that. But they've given us fair indications of what's going to happen. You know, so I don't think this is you know, this was a shock to the system. We knew that it was going to be down quite significantly.
John Gott Hewlett, another food company off the exchange at the moment, of course. The company was engaging in a collaborative process with its debt providers to ensure the company's long-term sustainability. John Gott Hewlett had concluded a waiver and undertaking agreement, lots and lots of stuff that you would understand as an accountant, David, that I would have no idea.
They're fighting about. For survival. That's what it is. They're fighting for survival. It's a company that should never have been in that situation. And this is, you know, this ranks, I wouldn't say as high up as Steinhoff, but it's pretty close that a company of this nature should find itself in this position.
Yeah, but not the same sort of subterfuge that has been associated with Steinhoff. I mean, this is just bad management. It's not
It is bad. And it's naughty also management. Playing with the numbers. Yeah, naughty management, you know, playing with the valuations. As I've always said, how do you ever value a sugarcane plant? And in this way, I mean the piece that grows up, you know, how do you ever tell you what, you know, decide on what value it is? So I think, also coming under immense pressure. I think also that they, you know, everybody got carried away when they started to sell the property, and it was almost as if they could sell that there was an insatiable demand or a never-ending demand for property. You know, and this is, we're talking huge properties on which there were massive sugarcane fields. You say, who's going to buy it in this economy? Yeah. Where's this all going to go? You know, and I think the market ran way ahead of itself in terms of the valuations and what the conversion of that land into profit would be. And they slowly came unstuck. You know, just weren't selling anything anymore.
What else are you seeing?
Sad situation.
It's very sad. What are you seeing at the moment?
I'll tell you what's worrying me at the moment.
Yes.
There's just no trade. There's absolutely – the last time I looked, just at about 4:15, which is – let me just see what the activity is now. We're at 12, but not even – 11 and a half billion now, and we're in the closing auction. So if we manage, which we normally do, to get up to 12 or 13 billion or 40, that's nothing. It's pitiful. And it's very, very low. It just shows you the levels of activity here. And there's nothing to sell. You know, there's nothing to get your teeth into or get enthusiastic about. Now, so gold shares go up one day, they're down the next day. Banks go sideways, up, down, whatever it is. Retailers come out with results that are reasonable. But there's nothing really to get people into this market, Lindsay. And it's a very big worry as to what people are doing with their money, particularly pension funds and provident funds that have to invest here. So they're ending up going into the bond market, which is keeping rates reasonable, you know, not running away from us, meaning going up. Listen to this. South Africa names André de Ruyter as Eskom CEO.
Yes.
André de Ruyter?
Never heard of him.
He was from Nampak. Am I wrong?
I don't know. I've never heard of him, as I said.
André de Ruyter. I'm sure he was the grey-haired man from Nampak. Or am I completely wrong? I hope I'm not.
I keep on saying I don't know.
Well, I thought they were talking about a chap, Carlitz, or you know, ex-BP or ex-Shell. André de Ruyter. I'm telling you. Sorry, I'm going to look this up while you can talk on.
No, I'm going to talk on at the moment. I'm going to talk on about the fact that Spurs and Arsenal played a match this weekend at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and there were 38,742 people there.
Yeah, you are, André de Ruyter.
Here you go.
He was from Nampak, I'm telling you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, Nampak. Good God. Okay.
Okay, well, good luck to him.
Yeah, we can go on.
I'm sure he's got to. Anyway, I got something from Liston Mainchis today, a person with whom you're intimately familiar. He said, I'm speaking to him tomorrow about this, and it was from an article that appeared on MoneyWeb, and this is the final chapter. It says, "Fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice." That was the headline. Increasingly, investors are realizing that the only variables that can be controlled when investing are the fees that you pay, whereas equity market performance turns out to be pretty random and certainly unpredictable. Equity funds that outperform today are probably yesterday's poor performers, and where they'll land up tomorrow is in the lap of the gods, with a capital G. Our research leads us to believe, this is the important final sentence, and listen to this, David Shapiro, our research leads us to believe that the majority of funds that beat the market do so purely as a result of luck rather than skill. You're in the financial services industry, but that's pretty brutal.
I think so. I think you know, you only test this when you haven't got research or you haven't got people to advise you. If we were in a world where there weren't commentators, when there weren't people like us now discussing the market and giving some kind of direction, if it was nothing more than a list that you had to choose on, I'm not sure you'd get the kind of performance that we get. There's a very symbiotic relationship between all these investments. It's all very well to draw the kind of conclusion that you do. So you need everybody to be form part of the of markets. Imagine if there were only ETFs or there were only unit trusts, you know, with shares, and there were no individual people buying shares, or there were no futures markets or various other markets. So I think you've got to be very careful to you know, who you criticize and who you try to kill. But I don't think it's luck. I don't buy that. Look at John Bickard. You know, bless him. He's running ahead of everybody. He took a calculated bet. I don't think that was luck. You know what I mean? He believed in what he saw, and he's been vindicated. Whether he'll repeat it or not, I'm not sure. But
I've been through John Bickard's career for a number of years, and sometimes he's down in the dumps, and I think to myself, look at your performance. You're actually probably not going to be employed in the next couple of months, and the next minute, you're a rock star.
I know. But there's a lot of skill to – there's still a lot of skill to the markets. And understanding businesses. And I think you've got to measure people over time rather than, you know, 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or something like this. I think, you know, I always like to ask people to judge us over 4, 5, 6 years, not because it takes time, like any business, to build up the trust. We buy portfolios and we buy a selection of shares, mainly on the offshore businesses, and they're based on themes which we can explain and justify. You like people to get involved with what they own, but you can't look at it on a day-to-day basis. It's very, very difficult. And to say what's your favorite share or what's your, you know, worst share and those kind of things. So you have to look at it as a package.
Yeah, you do, David.
But Liston should know. Hey?
What do you mean?
Liston's okay. He's been around a few years.
Crikey.
I forgot your Tottenham, but I didn't hear the end of your Tottenham Arsenal story.
Yeah, because you interrupted me, as you always do.
I saw the Sunday Derrator story.
Tottenham versus Arsenal occurred yesterday. And you'd think, well, there's 39,000 people there. What is that? What was that, a League Cup game or something? No, of course it was the Women's Super League. And Arsenal beat Tottenham at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium 2-0. And there was 39,000 people there. And I don't know why I'm saying this, because it sounds really sexist. But I watched the game. I watched the highlights of the game anyway. It was really, really good. But Arsenal just really, they did so well.
Isn't the England captain, doesn't she play for Arsenal? I think one of the top women play. Yeah.
And England beat Kosovo 4-0.
That's all we can attract, good. Yeah. We can only attract good women. We can't attract good men.
David Shapiro is the Deputy Chairman of Sassman Securities, and that was Shapiro World. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com, made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.